Jeff and Eric are best friends, as only two film critics could be. They bonded over movies and the Portland rain. It's the kind of romance only seen on TV. Then one day Jeff had to move away to far off San Diego, where it's sunny every day. Eric had to cry, he said, why, oh why? We have to find a way to make sure our friendship doesn't die. We'll have a long-distance relationship, the kind you see on TV, so you know it's legit. We'll watch our movies alone, and then we'll meet online. Record ourselves a podcast, and everything will be fine. Now we have Movie BS with Eric D. Snyder and Jeff Mayer. It's Movie BS. These critics are best friends forever.
Hello and welcome to Movie BS with Baron Snyder, the only film podcast on the internet. I am your host, Jeff Baer. Always and forever, here is my co-host, Eric D. Snyder.
Hello, I'm the host of this program, Eric D. Snyder. That's my co-host, Jeff Baer. Thank you for listening. And thanks to oneofus.net for hosting us.
Absolutely.
And for being our friends.
Well,
friendly acquaintances.
Yeah.
We're coming up on a year since we married oneofus.net, because it was at Fantastic Fest last year that marriage came to be.
I totally forgot about that.
Remember?
I forgot that it was there. For some reason, I was thinking it was South By.
Yeah. No, it was... Yeah. Fantastic Fest.
I love Fantastic Fest so much.
And they've announced another string of movies they're playing this
week.
Uh-huh.
Some good
very
ones.
Very good-looking ones there.
Yeah.
The Martian, that's a big deal. That's a big get.
It is a big get. I don't know when it actually comes out, so I don't know if it's one of those where it's like, yeah, it's kind of here, but it's also coming out in a week and a half. I don't know.
That's true.
But that was surprising that I saw that. And that was immediately what I thought. It's like, yeah. Oh, maybe I don't know when it comes out. Mr. Ben Wheatley's new film.
Yes. The
which
Man Who
I
Made
will,
Kill List and Sightseers.
And some okay ones.
Field in England.
Field in England was something that I didn't necessarily care for.
But yeah, I'm eager to see his thing. And The Witch, was at Sundance, and I kept getting shut out of screenings. It was the big hot ticket.
People were freaking out about The Witch. So. Anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves here because we still have to wait, I think,
that's
3 weeks?
Like 3 or 4 weeks away, yeah.
4 weeks away?
Way ahead of ourselves. Let's deal with the here and now.
We are your friends.
Yeah, and we're going to do a podcast for you where we tell you about movies. First up, We Are Your Friends.
You know, now...
Oh, it does. The Martian opens October 2nd, so like the day after Fantastic Fest ends.
There we go.
But still.
It's like instead of an advanced screening.
Yeah.
God, I love Fantastic Fest. Oh, I can't wait. It's
and that actually
so
is good because that means that probably we would miss whatever our local screening is of it, so it's good as playing at Fantastic Fest. Anyway.
We are your friends. Zac Efron and some other people are in a movie, and it's not about techno, okay? You might be like, oh, it's about techno. No. It's about EMD.
Nope.
Okay? Wait, dang it, wait, hang on. EDM. Dang it. EDM.
Electronic dance music.
I didn't know EDM exactly, but it was like as soon as I said, electronic dance music.
It's what they used to call techno in the old days. Although I think... there was always a difference between techno and house and the various other kinds of music. And I don't know if EDM encompasses all of those or if this is what those have evolved to be. I don't know how dubstep figures into the equation.
So this is a movie that I think it thinks it's a little bit more indie and street cred than it actually is. It's kind of like whatever it is, the opening title, just the graphics, the way that the
sometimes they talk and the words will show up on the screen.
Yeah.
Like big letters.
It's like, who knows what they're going to do? They're reckless, but they're not, because it's a very structured, ordinary film within this,
Well, they are reckless. They are reckless. Well, idiots, okay, yes. But yes, the movie is not reckless.
No.
The movie is very
straightforward. In the making of, it is not a reckless. He's a
– Cole is his name.
Cole Carter. DJ Cole Carter.
Wants to be a DJ. Not the kind of DJ who gets on the radio and plays songs. The kind of DJ who I think, like, you press play on iTunes and then there's music somehow, I guess.
Well, they show him working on occasion by moving dials a little bit or a mouse.
And this is not the movie's fault because I have never known what DJs do. I have never understood what happens. I'm not blaming the movie for that.
They are finding you should, because they definitely
– It involves turning knobs and moving levers. Like, I get that.
So anyway, and he's got some knucklehead friends and they're all from the Valley. They're all trying to they all have that get rich quick mentality, but they don't necessarily know how to achieve it. And it's not like they're looking to become criminals to do it. They're just trying to get by and have fun.
Although they're willing to be criminals to do it.
Yes.
One of them sells drugs and one of them wants to be an actor, kind of. And
that's true.
It's the year of movies about four idiots, four male idiots. You got your Entourage, you got your Magic Mike, XXL. There might have been more than four of them in that. There's no way to remember. Then this. This reminded me of Magic Mike XXL, by the way. A collection of guys that I don't really relate to or like. And there's kind of a story, but not really.
There's definitely more of a story and less enjoyment than Magic Mike. But we differ on the enjoyment factor of that movie. Do. This is Cocktail. This is Tom Cruise's Cocktail.
It's also Cocktail.
With a couple of buddies thrown in. Because eventually Wes Bentley shows up and he's the older, wiser, burnt out DJ. Mm-hmm. And he gives a really good performance in this movie that's otherwise ton of fun. And that's the weird thing. You would think an EDM film would be a lot of fun, have a lot of energy. Be peppy, but the story that they're telling, there's not a lot of joy in it at all. Like, you're not finding joy in the music. That's not what you're typically doing. Sure, there's a girl who will hear your rhythm and kind of seduce you with a dance.
She hears your track.
Sorry, track. But like, otherwise, it's just like, where's the fun? Like, these are four friends hanging out. They're not a good time. They're just kind of being idiots.
And they're such idiots. I don't like guys like this. I know – I've known people like this.
Yeah.
And I don't like them in real life, and I don't like them in movies.
That's the thing that this movie is trying to do, is trying to capture a certain youth movement and be able to be like, see, just like you guys, this movie's cool, and they know how to hang out. And it's like, hey,
I just think, shut up and quit swearing and pull your pants up.
There's that. There's the whole side job with this company. This company called Gold Star Realty Solutions. Oh, that's right.
John Bernthal is the guy there who's helping them do like real estate scamming or something.
Yeah, and that's just, it feels like that's a waste of time. The only thing that doesn't feel like a waste of time for me is when Cole Carter is talking with Wes Bentley's James about being a DJ, or like trying to figure out that world.
Yeah, James is mentoring him.
Because one has seen the world and doesn't necessarily feel like he has anything to offer it anymore. And the other one just wants to grab, what is it, the brass ring?
The brass ring is what one grabs, yeah.
Yeah. I think he's after grabbing that.
It's not so much about EDM or any kind of music. It's this, like you said, Cocktail, or it's kind of Saturday Night Fever. It's somebody trying to come up in the world of his chosen career. But then you got James's girlfriend, Sophie, played by Emily Ratajkowski.
Here's the thing about her.
Mm.
Her character is not a good person at all. She's the only woman of any substance in this film. And the rest of the women are just like topless at a pool party and crap like that.
Yeah.
It's not a well-written film for women at all.
And it's so boring and predictable that she's the older DJ's girlfriend and he's always kind of cheating on her. And, I wonder if she'll hook up with Zac Efron and what's going to happen. I was bored with much of it. And I was bored to the point of laughing. at how the way that Cole kind of refines his enthusiasm for EDM is by listening to the sounds of real life. Like you record like a guy using a staple gun to put shingles on a roof. That sound. Record that. Or the sounds of wind chimes or something.
Have you ever stopped and listened to the birds, though, Eric? Oh. Or the power lines? Have you ever really done that?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's cool.
The end, when he does play his personal track, completely brought to mind Ross from Friends. At his keyboard, there's one episode where he plays like dinosaur noises and stuff like that, and he thinks he's just doing the best thing ever. And it was just like, yep, Cole and Ross could really have a DJ off with these sounds. Mm-hmm. Great job.
You know, our good friend Dan Mecca, after he saw this movie, tweeted that it made him feel so old, and he's like like 25 or something.
Yeah, he's ridiculously young.
So. I don't know what hope there is for the rest of us.
There is. It is for the crowd of I love EDM, so I've been waiting for a movie about EDM. But when you see it, you're going to be like, well, come on. Like, yeah, they passed a couple of DJs that are well known, like when they were walking places. And there was hints of describing the beats per minute and, like, you know, getting into the rhythm.
I did find that interesting, a little bit about how they got into the technicalities of what makes it work.
Which I think was 4 minutes of the film. And otherwise it's like, well, Zac Efron's pretty. I want Zac Efron. I'm going to watch him do anything.
Sure.
But otherwise it's not it's not a film that the masses should pay attention to at all. It really isn't.
No, I give it a C.
It's a 5 out of 10. Oh, and also, they reached way too hard with the very serious thing that happens 3/4 into the film. Way too hard.
That is true also.
Yeah.
So We Are Your Friends is that. There's some other – there was that No Escape where Owen Wilson – like there's some white people in peril in Asia or something.
Right. We had to make a choice, and we both saw We Are Your Friends instead.
Obviously, since we just talked about it.
Right.
Yeah. And then Z for Zachariah, which played at Sundance and is now coming to theaters. And maybe also video on demand, I think. Maybe.
I don't know. We really haven't figured out a great way to explain this as a society yet.
To explain
there's
what?
Not like what is coming out on video on demand and
well,
what
no,
it
there
is
actually.
Sort of
Projectionlist.com has a great easy to see calendar and tells you all. We just didn't look.
Well,
that's all.
No, but I didn't know.
You didn't know about Projection List?
Projection?
It's new this year.
Oh.
Well, sorry, yeah.
It's brand new, Jeff. You've never heard of it?
Oh, Z for Zachariah, not on video on demand. My mistake. Limited release. Z for Zachariah played at Sundance, where we both saw it. I think it was the last movie I saw at Sundance, as I recall. It was. And so we didn't talk about it on our show back then, because I hadn't seen it yet.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
There's nobody named Zachariah in this movie. Spoiler alert. No Zacharias. So just if you're going into the movie hoping to see someone named Zachariah, you'll be disappointed.
That's a really good point. The director's Craig Zobel. He did Compliance. That's what you would probably know him best for. Mm-hmm. That kind of uncomfortable film about a back room at a fast food restaurant.
And somebody calls pretending to be the police and about what you can talk people into doing if they think that you're in charge. Yeah.
Yeah.
Z for Zachariah is
But this one here, we got ourselves a post-apocalyptic world.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a young woman, and she believes she's the last one on Earth.
Anne is her name, played by not Jamie Presley, but the new Jamie Presley, Margot Robbie.
The better. This is easily 2.0 Jamie Presley.
Well,
this
sure.
is an improvement on the model.
Sure.
Like, they worked out all the kinks of Jamie and gave us Margot, and I'm happier for it.
Anne is – she's a little preacher's young preacher's daughter in the South.
Mm-hmm.
She's the only human being around for miles, maybe anywhere. She doesn't know. There was something the rest of the world, or at least the rest of the country, is radioactive, but for some reason in this geographic area, this valley, the air is still clean.
Yeah.
And so that's why she's able to live there. She's got a hazmat suit so she can go into the town and get what's left of the groceries and stuff like
that. Really, yeah, it's a very minimalist sci-fi film, and I love that world that it creates. I'm very engaged with that. And they don't give you tons of information. They just give you tidbits every right. once in a while. And in this particular case, that works really well for me.
Yeah, it's fine. It doesn't matter how the world got wrecked. It did. And yeah.
And then along comes Chiwetel Ejiofor.
Well done.
Thank you. 12 Years a Slave and then some.
John, yeah. They call him in this movie.
And he's somebody that can he can solve some problems.
Because Anne has been, you know, she's getting by, she's living, but barely. She's barely surviving. Mm-hmm. She has not done anything in the way of, like, electricity or power or anything.
And this
and
is
John
a guy
can
who
do
can
do this kind of stuff.
Yeah, he can build. He's got a background. He can help out. Then somebody else comes along.
Caleb,
Chris Pine. And what we have here is an old-fashioned love triangle.
Yes. Although not – I feel like there wasn't too much, or the movie wasn't about the triangle.
It was about how do these three individuals move forward together. And
yeah.
clearly, both men were looking to be Anne's favorite.
Yeah.
And let's say it that way.
She has more in common with Caleb, who is also a Southern boy who had a religious upbringing. That's the thing. Her father was a preacher, and she still plays the organ in the little church that her dad left. And then John is a scientist, and he, when he says, "Here's how we can build a water wheel to make get power from the stream and power the generator," he suggests tearing down the church and using the wood. And it's hard. It's hard to miss the metaphor when the newcomer in Anne's life literally wants to tear down her church. So there's like a religion versus
new
science kind of
yes.
thing. Yeah,
right.
That metaphor is clear, and I like that aspect of the movie of that battle.
Yeah,
a little bit.
And I really liked the occasional tension between Ejiofor and Pine. And Pine, once again, kind of proves if you don't put him front and center in a blockbuster, he's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And he is here. And I loved how all of them, they made me believe, even though they're all so ridiculously beautiful,
mm-hmm.
they made me believe that, yes, these could be the last three people. And they all, Margot Robbie, she doesn't have makeup on. Chris Pine's eyes, no matter what you do to his face to make him look grisly, he's still got those amazing eyes. Mm-hmm. And Ejiofor with that beard looks awesome as well. And it's just
humanity really lucked out that these are the last three surviving mm-hmm. members. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to be okay genetically.
Yes.
If this is what we're rebuilding from.
Yeah. And even though you can kind of see where the movie is most likely heading, I still found great tension with that. It's mm-hmm. a pretty slow, deliberate pace, but a really good film.
It is based on a book, but my understanding is it's based very loosely. It has taken enormous liberties with some of the central structure of the way the story was told.
Well, I remember, I think, somebody telling me in the book there's two characters.
Yeah, that basically –
like it's
that the two guys
like
are one person in the book or something like that. So
it's really something that this has definitely gone a different way. It's an 8 out of 10 for me. I'm a big fan.
It's a B+. Z for Zachariah.
Wait a minute.
That means it's BS approved.
I feel like we have not had one for a while. Maybe I'm wrong, but it feels –
let me note this for the record. Mm-hmm.
Yes, please.
Wait, what did you give that other one? Five?
Five.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, wow, we're identical so far.
How about that?
Interesting. Who would have guessed it?
And then Turbo Kid.
It's
playing on a handful of screens, including it's in Portland this week at the Hollywood Theater.
Yeah, and I think this one is coming to video on demand, although I didn't see it on that list. I thought it was. Somebody said it was. I think Weinberg said it was.
Sound like something he'd say.
Ugh, Weinberg. Can't be trusted. So yeah, this is a film that clearly worships the 80s. And it takes place in, I believe it's 1997, which is the distant future.
Right.
So it's kind of like, imagine somebody that's diehard into pop culture from the 80s, imagining the most insane 1997 they can.
Right.
And that's kind of where we're going here. And post-apocalyptic again.
The apocalypse is all the rage nowadays.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw this at Sundance. I saw it at South by Southwest. It was the last movie I saw at South by, and so it was late at night, and I was burned out. I remember very little about it, except that I enjoyed it. I remember that it's, much.
Yeah. It does feel really creative, and there's definite lows in the film. Like it, and the lows are just kind of like the only thing they are is boring. That's the main thing. It's not bad. It's just like, oh, come on. Where's all that pep that you had?
Yeah,
where was all that creativity you had? Get back to it. Quit having just two characters talk about their feelings. Come on, let's move it along. Whenever it's moving, you're going to see some really nutty stuff here. Like, you're going to see a few deaths that I would say are very unique. Like, you haven't seen that sort of kill before. And things like that. And for me, not seeing a trailer, not knowing where it was headed, it felt really surprising. I couldn't peg the movie down for a while.
Yeah.
Like, it kept heading into a direction that I was kind of unexpecting.
Yeah, it's very violent, like over-the-top violent, yeah. And then also yes. kind of intentionally cheesy with the retro 80s feel and to it.
Our main villain is Michael Ironside, totally knowing that he's Michael Ironside, which is just great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yep.
But again,
and
it's mainly
this guy going on this adventure with this girl that he meets and trying to save the day. That's
there
it.
There you go.
It's that simple.
It's a blast.
Yeah. Whoa.
I
think
blast,
there are blasts in that
Snyder.
Movie, Eric. Wow.
Yeah.
Put that on the poster, everybody.
There you go. I don't remember anything about it, but it was a blast, said Eric D. Snyder.
Shrugs. Would you have that afterwards? You'd
maybe.
Shrug.
Yeah.
I'm giving it a 7 out of 10. Can you even remember what you gave it?
Something like that. Sure. Yeah. It's a terrific midnight movie with a crowd and a midnight and at the Hollywood Theater in Portland where it's playing. That'll be a good atmosphere.
Yes.
Yeah. Turbo Kid.
Turbo Kid.
Let's do question of the week.
All right.
I mean, what's stopping us? Nothing, right?
It's just us. That's the only thing that ever stops us, Eric.
That's true.
Oh, that's the only thing that ever gets in our way.
It's us.
Man.
Well,
we're the worst.
You.
What?
Question of the week. We asked you what second film in a series was the most improved over the first. We had many answers.
Yep. Let's just,
Let's get through the... let's say obvious ones, or the ones that we expected to hear.
Okay.
A few people said Road Warrior is better than the very first original Mad Max, which I think is a common sentiment.
That is definitely common.
And
of course, Wrath of Khan.
Wrath of Khan over the first Star Trek, yeah.
Yeah. Some people felt Two Towers and Captain America, and in both cases – well, not in both cases. So in Two Towers, I was like, I don't know – I didn't feel that way necessarily. Well, I feel like they're equal enough in the same world. Captain America, I can kind of understand because the first one and the second one are almost – they almost feel like, well, of course, yes, they're both superhero. But then beyond that, they're a different genre.
Yeah, and I liked so the first one better.
Yes. Well,
but
musical number, come on.
Sure, it had a musical number. And it was set in the 40s and it was fun.
Yeah.
But
right.
But also – it's like the difference between a B and a B minus or something. Like I don't feel like the second one was that greatly improved. I also don't understand this comment. This is Lance who said this on Facebook. It says, I know you guys hate comic book movies because you're not the snooty kind of film critics, but my answer is Captain America.
Wait.
And he goes on.
I know you guys hate comic book movies because you're not the snooty
I think he's sarcastically saying that even though we're not the snooty kind of film critics, we hate comic book movies. But that doesn't make any sense because we don't hate comic book movies. I don't know what that means, Lance. Lance, explain yourself.
Because in general, we are pro good movies, and some superhero movies have been good.
Unless by hate comic book movies, he means that sometimes we give like B minuses and 7 out of 10s instead of A pluses.
Right.
I don't know.
I think I gave Avengers 2 a 6. I think I did.
Terminator 2. Of course, that's a battle between the two Terminators. But again, I don't feel like the difference, even if you like Terminator 2 better, it can't have been that huge an improvement over the terrific first Terminator.
Right.
Of course, the person who said Terminator 2 then also says, a lot of people's answers don't seem to be drastic sequel improvements, but more of a preference for a sequel versus original. Yeah, like you, Ben.
Point that thumb at yourself, buddy. Devil's Rejects and House of 1,000 Corpses. Haven't seen either.
They're both thoroughly unwatchable and thoroughly unpleasant.
Well, that's not what Matthew feels.
I know. Or Steph. And more power to you, but those movies are abominations.
And I mean, he does at least say disturbing scenes. He's agreeing in that part. And I even feel this way with Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2. Yes, Spider-Man 2 is
terrific.
Spider-Man 2 is better. Mm-hmm. I think consensus-wise, we all feel that way. But I think that's almost a difference between a B and an A minus.
Right.
Maybe this is hard to do because bad ones they just don't get a second one.
Tend not to. Yeah, and I guess the number of part twos that are like really way better than part one is a relatively small number. I suppose.
Bob here has a James Franco problem, and that helps him feel like Rise of the Planet of the Apes and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Now, hang on a second. Dawn, oh man, which one came first?
Rise. Wait, no. Rise first and then Dawn, because it didn't
Are you
make
sure?
Sense. 90% sure. Yes.
Yes. Rise first, then Dawn. Yes. Okay.
Wait a minute.
Right?
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. Yes.
All
right. Paul says The Raid 2, it's a way more ambitious story than the first, which is definitely true. He says, I think it succeeds at being a better action movie as well.
Ooh. See, that's the second part that I don't totally agree with. I think it has great action scenes, but the other one is just a nutty wall-to-wall action.
Yeah, but the first one is just wall-to-wall action with no story.
Right.
Yeah. 22 Jump Street, said Scott.
Oh.
Said this is the easiest question we've ever posted.
Oh.
Interesting. Again, because I really like both of them.
I really like both of them, too. Whoa. Do you see Eric's Eric.
Nightmare on Elm Street 3, no, Dream Warrior?
No. Well, that's part 3. That doesn't count.
Yeah, that's a wrong answer anyway.
Eric says, the original. Oh, there's a different Eric. Oh. The original Pirates of the Caribbean was okay, but didn't wow me compared to its hype. But Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest felt much more confident, had a more interesting story, introduced the great characters, Davy Jones and Tia Dalma, had two of the most fun action sequences in the film, the cliff escape and the water-wheeled sword fight, and had a fantastic Kraken at the end. Wow. The water-wheeled sword fight, to me, is the epitome of waste of time action. It is very elaborate. There is so much energy put into it, and it could be removed from the film, and nothing would emotionally change for me at all.
I disagree with that. I disagree with the Eric's assessment there of all those.
Every sequel should disappear of Pirates of the Caribbean.
Honestly, so can the first one. The first one wasn't that great anyway, to begin with.
First one
like, I agree
solid...
with Eric on that. The first one was fine, and I remember being very surprised when it was such a huge
7 out of 10. I was like, oh, that's good.
It was fine. It was a B minus.
And then I was like, whoa, what's everybody worshiping this for?
Exactly.
Yeah. Mmm. The Bourne films. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Wait. Bourne Supremacy. Yeah, that was the second one with Paul Greengrass taking over as director. I could see that. I could definitely see that. There was a couple of adrenaline rush scenes that I don't think the first one got near to with the Bourne, the first one compared to the second one. Good answer, Kevin.
Somebody says National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
But that's
opposed to the first Vacation. No, it's not.
I'm sorry, what? European Vacation's number two. Eric. 100%. Yeah.
Well, all right. And I know you would never say something unless you were sure.
That's how I work. I did see a couple mentions for Hellboy 2. I would have to watch them both again to feel like if there was a dramatic difference. The only thing that I remember worshipping in Hellboy 2 was when they went into like their Mos Eisley cantina.
Yeah, that was funny.
That thing was awesome.
You worship a lot of things. I just that's not a criticism, just an observation. There are a lot of things that you worship.
Yeah, you're right. I should pick one thing.
Or a
to
lot
worship.
Of things that you say you worship anyway. I don't know that you actually worship any of these things.
No, now that I say it again, like if somebody was like, you worship that scene, I'd be like, what? No, I don't. I just kind of like it.
I saw Hellboy 2 with you, and I don't remember you like bowing down when the scene was going on or like
that's a good point.
Praying to it or
all right, let's get that out of my system. Like that one thing. What was that one thing we had to get out of my system that we eventually did?
Just so you know.
Just so you know, I've worked on that, and that's pretty much gone. All right. Worship.
Okay.
Worship's the new one. All
right. You were right that European Vacation was between Vacation and Christmas Vacation. Just confirming what you already knew, that you were right about that.
Evil Dead versus Evil Dead 2. Makes sense, but I have always felt like Evil Dead 2 is pretty much a retelling of Evil Dead.
It is, but it's funnier.
Yes.
It's like... It's like the let's try it again. Only now here's what we're really doing. Okay, now we know what we're doing. But it is just sort of a matter of personal preference.
It's like El Mariachi and Desperado.
Yeah,
it's like you're just doing the same story, but you're tweaking it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie to you. This whole question, I feel like was kind of a dud. I feel like we just didn't get much good material out of it.
But here's the thing. Do you have a good answer?
No, because I think it was flawed to begin with. Yeah,
yes,
I don't think it's the listener's
fault. Our
fault. I think it was
our
fault.
I mean, Star Trek makes a lot of sense for a lot of people to say Star Trek versus Star Trek 2. That makes a lot of sense. Superman versus Superman 2, I could kind of see as well.
Avengers 2, a better film than the first Avengers. Get out of here.
Nobody said that.
Somebody did. Dennis. Dennis, get out of here. Literally, get out of wherever you are.
The biggest somebody says Babe, Pig in the City, but they also really like Babe. That's just a matter of, like, those are two different films, and it's amazing that that even exists.
I need to see
Pig in the City again.
Pig in the City I like way more. I agree with that, but I like the first one, too.
I have not seen Pig in the City for a long time.
I saw Pig in the City in the theater on Thanksgiving evening with my dad. I think that's the one time I've ever gone to the movies just with my dad. And I don't remember why we saw that. It was the only thing that I don't remember why, but anyway, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, because otherwise, I mean, it's like, you know.
It's just a matter of degrees.
Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Which is ridiculous. Come on, that movie's
ridiculous.
Excruciating.
Bad Boys 2, that's ridiculous. Because not only that, it's an extra 4.5 hours longer than Bad Boys. And that's too long.
I don't like Bad Boys 2 better than
anything.
Including STDs.
Ooh, what about Prom Night 2? Somebody says that.
I don't know. I never saw any Prom Nights, I don't think.
All right. I didn't either. Yeah, no, because I don't... for my preference, I don't have a good one. I don't either.
It was a bad question. Stricken from the record.
Bill and Ted's Togus Journey. Come on.
We have to stop talking about this.
We have to stop talking about this question. It's our bad, everybody.
Yeah, it's our bad.
Now let's get something that we can unanimously all agree on and have the exact same answer for.
We'll try again. For next week, it's the end of the summer. So just tell us your two favorite films of the summer. They can be wide releases, indies, Small releases. Heck, even video on demand if you want, as long as it came out since May.
That's the key. It has to come out since May.
So your two favorite movies of the summer, tell us.
And yes, we'll, just two. Only two. One, two. That's it.
You can always email us at moviebspdx@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can post it on Facebook.
Yep.
What's our website, Jeff?
moviebs.com.
Hang on, I'm writing this down. Movie.
It's all lowercase. Wait, I'm
all
sorry.
One word?
Hang on. H. H T T.
P.
Colon. /.
Right.
www.
Now, do I spell out W or is it the letter W?
Wait. The second one you spell out.
Okay. Thank you.
And then a period, which some people say dot for that.
Oh, that's what dot means. It means period. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when... Never mind.
Yes, never mind indeed. Hey, let's play us a game.
All right, sir.
Let's play us a game of Interqual. And here's why. Because devoted
now
listener...
We say Interqual. That's why we do
Interqual.
It, right?
Interqual. Also because devoted listener Noah... has put together an Interqual jingle, which you'll hear now.
Interqual.
Yeah, so now I want to play Interqual all the time, because now that we have a jingle. We have a jingle for Pitch Me, too. So we're jingles for all our games.
We're getting more jingled.
Yeah. Noah also gave us a suggestion for a new game that we're going to try out next week.
That's right.
Noah's really doing all the heavy lifting here.
Yeah, come on, people. Help Noah out.
Really should be Movie BS with Bayer and Snyder and Noah. Interqual.
If we didn't have right hands, he would be our right-hand man.
There you go. Interqual is played like this. We're going to each name a movie, and then we're going to pretend those are parts 1 and 3 in a trilogy, and we'll make up what the second movie would be that ties them together.
Now, we've convinced you guys we don't know what movie the other person is going to say.
Yes.
So that's what we'll do right now. Do you have a movie in mind, Eric?
No.
I do, so right, we'll wait for you. Hey, while we're waiting, everybody, new remedial film school up at Film School Rejects. I watched A Room with a View.
Oh, yeah? Who'd you talk to about that?
Joanne Robinson of Vanity Fair. I had a very good conversation with her about it.
Oh, good.
And that is something that you guys can go read on Film School Rejects. And there you go. And you can watch A Room with the View. If you haven't watched it, you can just watch it on Netflix Instant right now.
What?
Just hit pause. Watch that movie, and then come back and listen to what movie Eric is going to suggest when he finally thinks of one. That's what you can do.
Okay, I have a movie. What's your movie?
Back to the Future.
Mine is Psycho, the original Psycho.
Okay, so let's have Psycho go first and be the part one, because that way... Okay, off the top of my head, Doc Brown does some experiments on this... house or family. Like he moves in.
Does he move into the house? Does he have any contact with Norman Bates? Norman Bates is now in prison.
Maybe. Well, for how long? Is he in prison at the end?
Yeah, they capture him at the end. They don't kill him because they made sequels to Psycho where he showed up.
Right.
Yeah, they've got him. He's in police custody.
Okay. So
Doc Brown is like at this point.
It's like Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, is Doc Brown is asking Norman for help in solving a crime?
Because there's something weird going on with the house.
Mm.
And he's a man of science, whereas Norman is a man of supernatural belief, potentially. Can we say that about Norman?
Not really. Just crazy.
He's just crazy? Well, then can we keep that up and be like, ooh, maybe he's not crazy. Maybe he sees the undead.
Maybe. Have you seen Psycho? Is this a movie that you're familiar with?
I think we've watched it together.
No. We haven't.
We haven't?
No.
Check the database. that's a joke, but he actually could, everybody.
I could.
You could check the database.
Is Doc Brown a respected scientist at this point, or is he a joke? I see, because I think
expected.
Okay.
Because then at the end he's a joke.
By the end of the movie, he's a joke, and that puts him where he is in Back to the Future. Okay.
Yeah.
So he starts out kind of respected, but he's going to lose the respect of the scientific community by. Here's what it is. The reason all the stuff happened in Psycho, these are spoilers for Psycho, by the way, if you haven't seen it, like Jeff.
Right.
All the stuff going on was Norman Bates, who had killed his mother years ago, and now he's crazy. He's got her corpse lying on the bed, and he's pretending to dress up like her and is killing people. And
killed others, right.
Right, yeah. And Doc Brown's theory is that, no, that's not true, that Norman did not kill those people. It was Norman's mother. Somehow, from beyond the grave, she really did it. So he sort of believes what Norman's crazy story was, which is that his mother did it.
Wait, how about he doesn't in the beginning, but Norman convinces him.
Norman convinces him that, no, I didn't do this. My mom did it.
Right. And so Doc starts doing tests on the whole thing. Like trying to be a ghost. Like, you know, those stupid ghost shows are like, we got to turn on our monitor and then we'll see a ghost.
Yeah.
He's doing stuff like that. Ooh. Hmm. And guess who comes through to stay?
I don't know.
Biff.
Oh, yeah.
A younger Biff comes by. What? And same with Marty. No. Oh, my gosh. What's Marty's dad's name?
George McFly.
George. Oh, George.
George comes through?
Sorry, George. George comes through.
What's George doing? Traveling.
He's traveling.
By himself?
How old is George in this movie?
Well, this has got to be not too many years before Back to the Future. Or, I mean, maybe it is, I guess.
Maybe this is how he meets Marty. This is maybe how Doc meets Marty.
Oh, and Marty's like a little kid?
And he implants something in Marty, some sort of like memory that he like. That's why he has to go find him later, because he's got the key to the time machine, and Marty doesn't even realize it.
Okay, yes. While Doc Brown is living at the Bates Motel, checking things out, he's also running the motel. He's operating the motel as an actual motel.
Yes,
because he wants to trace Norman Bates' footsteps, sort of live his life and see what happens. So he's running the hotel, and the McFly family comes through. And stays there a couple of days, and that's where he meets all of them. And
like a 5-year-old Marty.
Yeah,
we're talking. Yeah,
I don't think we need Biff.
Okay,
maybe that's a reference to Biff, but he wouldn't need to be in the story.
Maybe he just drives by and like throws a milkshake on George.
There you go.
As he's driving by, it's like, oh, that Biff.
Yeah. And then in the end, Doc Brown has totally ruined his reputation by going all in on the whole, no, there's ghosts here.
But we the audience are starting to believe in ghosts.
We're starting to believe along with them. Yeah.
Yes. What's the reveal? Like, how is the reveal done that there's no such thing as ghosts?
Norman Bates snaps out of his insanity and.
Does he break out? Can he break out of prison? And like something there is all related to it.
Yeah. Breaks like, out. Maybe comes to the motel.
Maybe, yeah. Comes in, and then like Doc like looks around the corner and he sees that it's just Norman like jingling chains.
Right.
And it's like, oh, Norman.
Right.
And then Norman tries to kill him and you know whatever.
By the end of the movie, Doc Brown is swearing that he will prove he is right, even if he has to go back in time and show you all what happened at the motel. So help me, I will build a time machine and go back and film the events at the motel, and I will show you people.
Yeah. And that's the part 4 that people keep thinking that they want to see, but really it probably wouldn't be that good.
Back to the Future?
That's the part 4, him going back to the Bates Motel.
To prove that he was right about the thing that actually he's wrong about.
Right.
That's the tragedy of all. He's going to go to all this trouble to prove himself right, and he is not right.
Yeah.
He's wrong.
Yeah.
That is going to be it.
Well,
that's probably why he goes kind of crazy. He kind of loses his marbles, doesn't he?
Right. He does a little bit. He's not respected.
No, and he's a little kooky.
Yes. I wouldn't want my son hanging out with him.
No,
my
son was in high school. I don't know why the McFlys allowed that.
No. Should really think about that, people.
Yeah. And that's how you play.
Late night experiments? I don't think so.
Intercool. No. What do we call this? We never have good titles for Nicole. Psycho, two, TOO. Because Doc Brown's kind of psycho. Eh.
Back to Bates. Back to Bates.
Back to the motel. Back. Nah, it doesn't. Nah. Nah. Forget it. There's no title. It's untitled. It's a movie with no title.
Yes, I agree. That was me thinking for a second, then I gave up.
Hey, this is the last week we can do this. I want to give the trouble report. Trouble the cat has been living with me all summer. And this week, she goes to her new home in heaven. No, because her
owners. She's out of all the nine lives. Mm-hmm. That's it. She was just hanging on to one more. Yep. Have you told Mike you're handing her back with only like three or four lives left?
I'm just going to hand him a dead cat. Here you go.
You should do this. Is this trouble? Just like a dead cat. Oh, but where do you find a dead cat at this hour?
Oh, man. No, Trouble is doing fine. Despite being 15 years old, she did not die this summer while she was under my care. And now, of course, I've never lived with Mike and like seen his day-to-day interactions with Trouble, but I'm fairly confident that I'm nicer to Trouble than he is. That as far as like brushing her and petting her and taking care of her, I feel like I pay her more attention than Mike did.
Hang on. Do you actually brush her with a brush?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
And is it for the point of like removing hair?
Part of that is that. But she also loves it. Oh, she loves it. She loves the brush. She does. She's got to have it.
All right. Be honest. Are you more excited to vacuum, or would you rather be able to keep Trouble more? Which feeling is more exciting? Like the idea of possibly keeping Trouble longer.
Yeah. Of removing every cat hair from the house.
Yeah.
But I
getting
do like
rid
Trouble.
Of all signs of Trouble.
I don't know. I don't. That's a tough question. We'll see once she's actually gone. We'll see how bad I miss her. She loves the brush. Like one side of the brush is the soft bristles and the other side is like the really pokey ones. And she likes the pokey ones. Like she'll get her face all up in it. And sometimes like she wants the brush, but I'm not in the mood or I got other stuff to do. And she'll go and just find the brush and rub her face up on it.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, yeah, get started without me. I'll be there in a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how it is most of the time.
Yeah. No, we have a good relationship. I think it's satisfying for us both.
You're kind of curious how much you're going to miss Trouble and then you're going to look into getting a cat. Is this what's going to happen?
It's a possibility.
It is.
It's a real possibility that I'll feel like, oh, I would like to have a cat of my own.
You know how my dog already likes you every time you come over?
I love
that
awesome.
Sort of thing.
Awesome. I get along very well, yeah.
And that hasn't gone away since we've moved away. He still recalls you the few times that he's been able to see you. If you come over smelling like a cat, it's going to go to some like euphoric level where... It's his favorite thing in the world to like realize that somebody's been near a cat.
Oh, really?
He's so happy about it. yeah.
Because Austin doesn't want to like chase and kill cats. He just
He just wants to be close to them. But it's not. I mean, his tail is wagging.
Right.
But I don't know if he's never relaxed when a cat is around.
So he's not sure what to do, but he knows he wants to be sort of like me and girls in high school.
Yeah.
Like I get that you're exciting, but I don't know what to do, and I'm kind of scared.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you turned out to be right about that.
Yes, exactly. I should have.
You had
stuck with my
instincts.
You should have stayed
away.
I am curious. Once Mike gets here and moves into the new house, when I come over, I'm curious if Trouble will remember me. Or give any. That's the thing with cats; you can't always really tell what they
think. Because Trouble has wanted me to be more friendly than I am.
Yeah,
and sometimes I give in, and other times I don't. But like Trouble's the kind of cat that it's like you're sitting in a chair, and it like jumps up on the head of the chair and like starts just messing with your head.
Yeah,
because it wants attention. Oh, Trouble.
Also, because you're sitting in her chair. That's her chair, Jeff.
Yeah. Well. You know, it's tough. I don't like to because I don't like cat hair a lot.
Right.
So I do try to avoid chairs when I go over to people's houses where it's like, oh, God, that's where the cat sits. Ugh.
I also don't want to be one of those people that have cat hair all over their apartment and don't realize it.
You got to get one of those hairless cats.
Well, No, those don't look. They look like rats. I don't want one of those.
I know. I was kidding. I know, like, but you were like, well, I've thought about it, but no.
I have thought of it. I'm vigilant with the adhesive roller thing that you use to roll the hair up, you know, off of things.
There might be some like shedless cats. Like there are dogs.
They'd be expensive though.
That look all right.
I'm not paying. Oh, I'm not paying good money for a cat.
You got to stalk. Just stalk the Humane Society.
Yeah.
Every day, be there right when it opens. You go, hey, you got any of those shedless cats?
You got any of those hyperallergenic cats?
You got some?
Oh man, I need it so bad. I need one of those.
Can I get some of that?
Just that's exactly what I'll do.
Give me a hit of that cat.
And that's the final Trouble Report.
Mm.
The Summer of Trouble.
Man, I hope Trouble doesn't die in like the next 2 weeks. It would still be traced back to you.
Somehow be my fault. Yeah, once I hand her back to Mike, I assume no more responsibility.
No. Although, yeah, you can't, because of that big house, he's not going to know every nook and corner of it. So, like, she could get into some trouble.
She could. And again, it won't be my fault or my problem. Yeah,
you're right. I'd say after 24 hours, you're in the clear.
The second I hand her to Mike, she is no longer my responsibility. Period.
Why don't you get some get that in writing with Mike? Now, if Trouble dies by the time you get home, is it my fault? Just ask that.
I will. I'll clarify. That's a fair question. And that's the end of the show. What did we learn today? We are your friends.
We are your friends,
and we love you. We appreciate your friendship.
But if you're that Zac Efron movie, you're just okay.
Yeah.
You're just okay
at best.
Yeah.
Z for Zachariah is good times.
It is good times. It's a nice, small, simple film that is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Great human dynamics.
That's exactly what it has. Great human dynamics. Yeah. And Turbo Kid is crazy, violent, goofy.
And most of the time fun and some of the time fast paced and only occasionally boring. But like you'll get a sense and you'll just feel it. You'll be like, oh, they're just going to do something boring here. And that's when you can go get a snack.
There you go.
Yeah.
Tell us your two favorite movies of summer 2015 and we'll tabulate them results next week.
Both of us are going to have Mad Max as one of them.
Yes.
I wonder what your other one will be. I have no clue.
I wonder too. I'll give that some thought.
Wait, don't you wonder about mine?
Sure, I wonder about yours too. Actually, okay. I think I know yours.
Tell me.
No, I'm going to write it down and then we'll see if I was right. I'm writing it down right now.
Oh, I believe you.
Yeah, you hear the typing. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Visit us at moviebs.com and we're on Facebook. And if you see us on the street, you can say hi to us.
Some people will see us on the street at Fantastic Fest.
In like more 4 weeks.
More often.
In four weeks. That's not yet.
I can't wait. I can't wait. I'm just so excited.
Until next week, for Movie BS with Bear and Snyder, I'm Eric D. Snyder.
I am Jeff Bear.
Thanks for listening, and good day.
I said good day.